You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
If you ever thought the impact of the quarterback is overrated, just look at the matchups that we have in the NFL conference title games. You got Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers. You got Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen. That is if Mahomes is healthy. Brady Rodgers certainly speaks for itself. Brady the GOAT. Well, many think Rodgers is the most talented quarterback of all time. And if it's not Rodgers, then that honor probably goes to Patrick Mahomes. He's already got one Super Bowl ring and should be in line for a few more. Josh Allen, he's the newcomer here, but he played like an MVP down the stretch and is as dangerous as anyone in the group. And the formula is really simple. You get an all-time great quarterback, go deep into the playoffs. I'm sure the GMs are going to be watching this weekend going, we got to get one of those guys. And good luck, because these guys are special, should make for some exciting conference title games. As far as the availability of Patrick Mahomes, we don't know. A concussion protocol. But here is his head coach, Andy Reid, talking about Patrick Mahomes and how well he's doing.
Yeah, he's actually doing very well. I mean, I just talked to him, and he's doing good. I mean, we'll see how he is tomorrow. But, I mean, right now, he's feeling good.
A lot of times we may see something and go, oh, that didn't look bad. And then we realize it is bad. Or sometimes you think, oh, I don't know how that guy's getting up. This didn't look egregious. You know, it didn't look like Mac Wilson, you know, it was a cheap shot. Lamar Jackson, same thing when he got knocked out. You're never quite sure when the impact of that play and what it does to that person. But you saw that yesterday, and Chad Henne came to the rescue. And here's Andy Reid talking about his backup quarterback.
I'm proud of Chad and the way he handled everything. And, you know, he probably said it best when he said, listen, this team is unbelievable when somebody has to come in and make them feel comfortable. And, you know, that's what team's all about. So, you know, again, I'm proud of the way he handled things. So,
yeah, and he should be, because that was one of those moments. If you start to see the momentum shift a little bit, Chad Henne's coming in, all of a sudden he throws an interception, and then he comes back and makes two of the greatest plays. Well, it's not a great resume, but they are two high-end plays for him and what he did. The scramble, and then also that fourth down pass that basically allowed them to run out the clock. But as far as surprises go, there was a report prior to the start of the Saints-Buccaneers by Jay Glazer. It's what I think most of us thought, that this could be Drew Brees' last game. He is sort of holding off retirement talk. But you got that feeling that this was it. Here's Brees after the game.
This your last game?
Well, I'll answer this question one time, and that is that I'm going to give myself an opportunity to, you know, think about the season, think about a lot of things, just like I did last year, and make a decision.
Yeah, you didn't look good. Yeah, you know, had three interceptions there. And you start to think about, he's played in 305 games. Drew Brees, 305 NFL games. That includes postseason. It was the only time in any of those games in which he both had at least three interceptions and he passed for under 150 yards. It had been over 4 years since he was last picked off three times in a game, week 14 of the 2016 season. And that was also against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But what you saw yesterday is, I think, what we've been seeing the last couple of years, and that is a steady decline with Drew Brees throwing the ball down the field. The offense isn't explosive. I thought the defense was the star this year for this team. I didn't think Tampa was great, but Tampa was opportunistic, and Tampa has a very good defense. I told you Devin White is a star. He's only 22. But Winfield, you've got some players who can make some plays over there. And that'll be fun to see. Weather is going to be an issue in Green Bay. It'll probably be in the mid-20s, probably a chance of snow up there as well. And then you got Buffalo going to Kansas City. But we'll dive into a lot of this with Troy Aikman. He'll join us coming up. McLovin, do you have a poll question for me? This program brought to you by M-Drive. It's the supplement I take every day. Powerful ingredients backed by science. You get energized, stronger, leaner. Go to mdrivedan.com today. Free shipping. 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't let age beat you. Refind your prime with M-Drive.
Okay, we have a bunch of NFL questions over here.
Okay.
You could start with a controversial rule, a quarterback's future, or Deshaun Watson.
How about I ease into the show?
Okay.
How about we ease in?
Okay. Well, let's start with an older gentleman, a man of leisure, potentially.
All right.
If you're Drew Brees, do you hang it up after yesterday? Yes or no?
I don't want to tell anybody when to retire. I think we in the media, we want to be ahead of it. You want to be, are you ready to retire? You're going to retire. Peyton went through this for a long time. And Drew Brees, you know, all the greats, if you stay around long enough, that, like Ben Roethlisberger, we're going through that right now. Maybe Phillip Rivers going through that right now. I hope they get to play as long as they want to play and somebody gives them that opportunity. And he's already got a great job at NBC Sports. My only concern, and it's a selfish one, is I don't like to see when these quarterbacks sort of fade away. Like they go out and they're limping when they walk off the field. Maybe literally, maybe figuratively. But I didn't think Drew Brees looked great this year. I didn't think he looked great last year. Now, you can put up good numbers in today's NFL, but are you truly dangerous? And I didn't think Drew Brees was dangerous this year, or last year for that matter. And, you know, as a result, if the Saints want him to come back, then that's on them. Then you know, Sean Payton's a brilliant offensive-minded coach, and if he sees something in there, then I'm going to trust his judgment there. But if I'm the Saints, I think it's time to move on. I just think you have some young offensive weapons there. I don't think Taysom Hill is the future there, but Sean Payton, I'll defer to him. If he thinks he is, then I trust him. I want to remember Drew Brees as being a great player, but that's me. If he wants to still continue to play, great. It's very, very rare when you see a quarterback, and it's just a quarterback, where he gets to make the call that this is it. You know, John Elway couldn't play anymore. I mean, it was that simple. Or John would have come back because John, how can you win a Super Bowl and go, I'm going to retire? You win a Super Bowl and you go, hey, I can like to win another one here. It's hard to leave no matter what. If you win, it's hard to leave. It's hard to leave when you lose. It might be harder to leave when you have a performance like that by Drew Brees because you feel like you let your city down, you let your team down, and nobody wants to go out that way. Did you see the cool video after the game? And this was late after the game where Brady is getting ready to go to the bus. And Brees is on the field with his kids. His boys always want to go out there and play some football. Brees is out there, sees Tom, and they're right around the end zone. And one of Brees' boys is like, hey, Tom, can you throw me a ball? And he had one of those little Nerf footballs there, and Brady's throwing him, you know, a touchdown there. It was a cool moment to see two of the greats of all time and Tom understanding what that moment means, because we're not very far away from Tom having that same moment where you walk off the field for the final time. And I think you saw that with Drew Brees last night. Yeah, Seton.
It is interesting, though, that you don't get the sense that Tom is ready to walk away at all.
No.
Not even close. Whereas Drew, it's clearly on his mind. But Tom Brady doesn't look like he's ready even close.
Nope, not at all. Wait, he already said that he's coming back next year. Gronk wants to come back next year. Yeah, McLevin.
What about Jameis Winston in this picture? I think he's a free agent. He looked good on that one.
I thought he signed a two-year deal.
Oh, he did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was a two-year deal for, what, $16 million?
No, that's Taysom.
Did he do
Jameis,
that?
Jameis, I think, is a million.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think they have to make a decision on him. But
oh,
how about
right.
a Jameis-Taysom combination next year? I think that's kind of interesting. No?
I need somebody I can count on. Like I don't like the interchangeable parts. By the way, if I knew a trick play was coming when Jameis Winston came in, I would have thought the Buccaneers would have known there was a trick play coming. Because he wasn't going to go out for a pass. And, okay, we're going to line you up over here. Something's up. Something's up. And then all of a sudden he throws a touchdown pass. But there was a lot. There was a lot this weekend. You know, the Browns with the Chiefs. And I told you I like the Browns. I thought they would hang around. Kansas City allowed them to hang around. And they had an opportunity. And I know that we'll talk about the fumble that went out of the end zone there. I don't like the rule with Rashad Higgins. I don't like it. But, you know, this is where you come up with a solution. It's one thing to say they got to get rid of that rule. Okay, so what is the solution? I think the Danettes, I'm going to open it up to you guys. You guys come up with try to convince me what you think the rule should be. Because this is where this is what we do. We're in the moment. There's no way a team that doesn't have a 500 record winning their division should host a playoff. Okay, now we move on from the Washington football team. This is when you keep it alive, or you hope the NFL keeps it alive, to say, hey, let's reconsider this with the NFL Competition Committee. You have this rule that's in place. When the offense going for the pylon, if you have the ball and it goes out of the end zone, then you lose control of the football there. All right, I don't like it, but it is the rule. And I go back to a play that Ryan Tannehill had. And Mike Vrabel, Tannehill fumbled the ball. I don't know the exact week when it was, but Vrabel said to Tannehill, protect the football. Like, yeah, you know the rule, protect the football. Now, does it do away with one of the more exciting plays in the NFL when you're reaching for the pylon? Yes. I just don't think the offense should be penalized that harshly. Now, move it back to the 20-yard line. Let him have the ball again. Okay. They lose the down. Okay. But that didn't cost the Cleveland Browns, in my opinion. And Kansas City allowed them to stay in the game. I mean, was it devastating, you know, where you lose, you know, the momentum like that? Absolutely. Yes, Eden.
So that, I kind of love the swing of emotions, ooh, though, where this dude's diving for the pylon, and unfortunately, you know, if you don't fumble the ball.
Well, that's what Belichick would always say. Belichick would say, protect the ball. You know what the rule is. And Vrabel, a disciple of Belichick, said to Ryan Tannehill, protect the ball. Like, you know the rule. We're not changing the rule. It's not like it happens where you go, let's change the rule right now.
Or like the idea, though, that like, oh, hey, come on, that fumble, you can't penalize it. That's not fair. I know we fumbled, but I mean, at least give him the ball back.
Yeah, Todd.
It wasn't recovered by the other team. You made a play. They're all about offense, the league, in every way, shape, or form with their rules. He's diving and trying to make the play. It slipped out of his hand. It goes into the end zone. The punishment should be no worse than getting the ball 20 away. The other team gets it. Shocks me.
We finally came up with a rule that helps the defense, and then we want to get rid of it here. Yeah, Paul.
You're right about Belichick. 3 years ago, it happened in a game to another team, and some beat reporter just asked Belichick what he thinks about it. And he said, we have a policy that you do not reach for the end zone, and you will get benched if you do so. He tells, like, the rookies, don't try to make that play because the downside is too big.
Yeah. I don't like the rule. I don't like a team that doesn't have a 500 record winning its division hosting a playoff game. But if you don't move to change the rule, then history will repeat itself. And then we'll come back 3 years from now and we'll go, can you believe that they got a home game for the playoffs? Yes, McLevin.
See, the NFL marketing arm, all they do is show slow-mo of guys diving for that pylon. So they love that play. And that rule encourages them not to do that play. So, but I think they should definitely get rid of it.
I know, but I have to have something that does penalize the offense. I don't think you should lose the football.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe go to the 20. That was my solution.
Well, I'm going to let you wait. You guys can do a little homework here, and you guys will get a 20-second presentation where you tell me what you think you should do with that play, that call. What else do we have, poll question-wise?
Well, we talked about the Saints. Of the four losers from the weekend, who is in the brightest shape moving forward? So you got the Saints, you got Cleveland, Baltimore, and the Rams.
That's an interesting question. Because I'm trying to look at this and go, okay, you're going to have a quarterbacking change in New Orleans. Baltimore needs some wide receivers. The Rams got a great defense and a question mark at quarterback. And Cleveland, I think Cleveland's on the right track. I do. I think Kevin Stefanski's done a great job. Baker Mayfield, I think, showed improvement there. I think maturity. I'll start there. They've got running backs. They got a really good offensive line. I'd shore up the defense. They need some help there. And if you want Odell Beckham Jr. back, or you trade him, whatever you decide to do. But I see a lot of promise with Cleveland. I do. And if Ben Roethlisberger steps down in Pittsburgh, you know, you still have Baltimore in there. But the Browns can still be that 10-11 win team. Absolutely. But the Rams, I'm curious about the Rams. Because I've said before in the last 2 years, and as much as I like him as a person and a guest on this show, there's question marks with Jared Goff. I really think, and I thought he played well. You're playing with that broken thumb, and you're in Green Bay trying to match up Aaron Rodgers there. He didn't hurt them yesterday. Maybe he didn't help them as much as you want your star quarterback to help you, but I'm not going to put that on Jared Goff. It just felt like, you know, after the game, Sean McVay said, hey, we're basically evaluating everybody here. Yeah, Paul.
On Baker Mayfield, last year, 22 touchdowns, 21 picks. This year, 26 touchdowns, 8 picks on the season.
Yeah, and I think that's Kevin Stefanski. The play calling, I think they understood who they were, and they hung in there. Like a younger team, inexperienced team, usually you're going to fold. You're going to fade. You know, you're down double digits to Mahomes in Kansas City, but they didn't. You know, they're a running team. And I think that that probably goes against everything that Baker wants to do, but that put you in position to stay in that game yesterday. Yeah, McClellan.
I think there's a problem with Baltimore and Lamar Jackson. It's not, I think the cold weather doomed him on Saturday. Like he said, he'd never play in the snow. He's a Florida guy. I don't know, like, is he ever going to be a postseason quarterback? I think the cold weather kind of is not great for him. I can't explain it.
He plays in Baltimore.
I know. I was thinking if he got a home game, which he could have got, like, would that have made a difference? It's a little warmer.
Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are from California.
I know, but, yeah, but they, you know, Deshaun has never played in a snow game his whole life up to this point. He's never once played in snow. I mean, sorry, Lamar. Yeah.
You know, Brady had not played in a snow game up until the Raiders, that Tuck Bowl game.
Never in Michigan? Never once?
Well, cold weather, but I don't think big snow like that.
But I think,
but there was no snow for Lamar. There was wind.
Also, the Ravens had such a rickety season because of COVID. Like I think,
yeah, they did. Yeah,
you know,
did.
I don't think they were really a good. That's a good team.
Yeah, and you know, they lost some offensive linemen. They just didn't seem explosive. And I thought they had their magic there. I thought they had their mojo the last 6 weeks of the season. And but give credit to Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo said, we think we can contain Lamar Jackson. And they did exactly that. But that was a close game. You know, if Lamar connects on the play before the interception, you know, that was a 14-point swing. So he has a touchdown, and then the next play, he throws the interception. That's 14 points right there. And that was it. Yeah, McLeod.
That wide receiver's got to tackle him. You know, he had his arms on him.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Troy Aikman, the Hall of Famer, he was on the call last night, Bucks Saints, and he'll be at Lambeau next Sunday, the NFC Conference Championship game between the Buccaneers Packers at 3 Eastern on Fox. Troy, thanks for joining us. What advice would you give Drew Brees today if he asked for it?
Take some time away and just give it some real thought. I mean, I know he's been thinking about this for a long time. He's been doing it a long time, of course. But I think he just needs to get away and let some time pass. It's hard to make these kinds of decisions after a tough loss like what he just experienced.
But you went through this even when you retired and then you flirted with coming back. Like, what is that urge that you got with those two or three different times where you thought about it?
Yeah, well, the first one was San Diego with the Chargers. It was as soon as I got released by the Cowboys, I had considered going to the Chargers, and then they ended up signing Doug Flutie. And that was actually Drew Brees' rookie year. They drafted Flutie that year. We would have been teammates had I gone. But it was a couple years later when I heard from Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles. And then a year after that, my third year out, when Dave Wannstedt and Norv Turner were with the Dolphins and asked if I would consider coming out. And I think what it is, Dan, is for me, I was actually 34 when I retired. So to still feel like you can do it and have your health and then miss the competition of it. You just, you know, now I'm fully satisfied in my job of broadcasting, but early on it was hard walking out of a stadium and not knowing whether you had won or lost. But I think for Drew, because of his age, you know, he's 42 years old, that the days are kind of you know, not totally. He could still play another year, of course, but he's not going to have the window of opportunity. I just didn't want to look back and just think, man, I wish I'd given it another shot. In hindsight, I'm glad I didn't do it. But at the time, it was a real urge, and I was going to do it for the Dolphins. At the end of the day, Rick Spielman was the general manager, and he's the one who ultimately just couldn't pull the trigger on it. They thought they were a quarterback away from going to the Super Bowl, but as it turned out, they really were not that good. I think the team went 6-10 that season, and so as I watched the Dolphins play that year, I thought, wow, I'm really glad. I don't think I wouldn't have made a big difference to that team.
But I wonder about Drew Brees. You walk off the field. You don't want to walk off this way. At home,
no way.
Three interceptions. But when you win, Troy, there's part of you that says, I want to do it again. Like, why? Yeah. Like Elway, you know, limped away. He didn't walk away. He limped away after winning. Yeah. Peyton knew he couldn't play anymore. Like, it feels like that's the only way you can walk away from winning is if you're barely able to walk away.
I agree with you. And that's a great point. If you had asked me early in the season, midway or so, if I thought Tom Brady was going to come back, even though he gave the Bucs a 2-year commitment, I would have said it's 50-50. As much as Tom has said he's going to play for X number of years. Now, he's having the most fun he's had, and they're winning. There's no way he's not going to come back next year. So, and I agree with you as far as it goes for Drew that, I mean, that is it's been an amazing career, of course, the all-time leading passer. But that was one of his worst games of his career. It was the worst game of the season. And to have that be your final performance and go out, you know, short of winning the Super Bowl, you're going to go out not having won. But that's going to gnaw at him. He's a great competitor and a real disappointment. I don't think ultimately that's going to be decisive in whether or not he decides to come back.
How dangerous is Brady?
Well, he's real dangerous. I just think that I commented on it early in the game that I thought those two quarterbacks for young quarterbacks to watch and kind of emulate as far as how they play the game. I think Tom, having had a number of conversations with him about the position, there's a reason why he's won as many games as he has. And yes, he's had good players around him. He's had good coaching around him, all those things. But Tom understands all the little details of the game and what it takes to play winning football. And he did that in the biggest game of the year for him yesterday.
Would you rather have a quarterback mentally tough or physically?
Mentally. Yeah, I think that all the quarterbacks in our game are physically tough. I think to get to even the NFL, you have to have some amount of toughness, some are able to play through things more than others, but I think more today than even when I played, and I thought that when I played things were kind of hard, but with social media and all of the critics out there, I think mentally you've got to be really, really strong to play this game.
Well, I look at Lamar Jackson. At this same age, Aaron Rodgers had thrown one touchdown and one interception at age 24. Now we're questioning if Lamar Jackson can win a big game.
Yeah.
Are we being fair, given the talent he has and the resume, the brief resume, winning an MVP, that he should be winning these games?
No, I don't think it's fair. I mean, you think back, I think Peyton Manning lost his first three playoff games, you know, and some people were questioning that. Now you laugh at that when you think about it, that Peyton Manning was ever questioned for anything. And, you know, we're quick now. Even when guys come into the league as rookies, we within a couple of games, I hear people start to comment on whether or not a guy's a bust or not. I mean, there's a number of us, me certainly being one of them, that had that been the criteria back when we began our careers, we never would have made it. You know, they would have replaced us really early on. So, yeah, I think it is very unfair. But I also know it's what everyone signs up for and they understand it.
Lamar had a concussion this weekend. Patrick Mahomes had a concussion. You've had your history of concussions. Do you know you have a concussion in the moment?
You know something's not right. I know that for mine, I always say this, I had two really serious concussions. I think all head injuries are serious, so I don't want that to be misinterpreted. But the others that I had, whether it was 5 or 6 or whatever it was, I think we're pretty minor. But, yeah, you know that something's not quite right. It's not a guessing game, I think, for the one who has one.
But did you try to go back in?
Yeah. I think, you know, the trainers now more than ever, they're really good about it. And then they've got a third party that's able to evaluate the player and decide whether or not he's capable of coming back and playing. I think the league's made great strides in that regard. There was a time, I mean, even I had a concussion in the championship game to where I still have no recollection of having played in that game. Total amnesia from that game, and yet I played the very next week in the Super Bowl. There was no bye week. So I never missed a game the following week following a concussion, and I think that's where things have really improved, that these players have to go through a protocol. And, it's stringent, but I think that's good.
Did you go back and watch the tape of the game that you don't remember?
Yeah, I did. We got to Atlanta the week of the Super Bowl, and I put on the game. Pretty surreal experience. When you're watching yourself play. You don't remember any of these throws. I actually played good too. Best part.
You and Joe Buck should announce that game so you can actually critique yourself in the moment there. Wow, that's Troy's going to be on the call with Joe Buck, the Bucks and the Packers at 3 Eastern at Lambeau Field. Playing in the snow, how big a deal? Those conditions, how big a deal is that? You have Tom, whose blood is probably thinned out in Tampa.
Right.
We make a big deal about it. Playing in the cold weather, is that big a deal?
I think it's a pretty big deal. I think because of the game being the NFC Championship game, I think the players, they won't even really be thinking of that much. They're going to be so excited about the fact that they're one game away from realizing a real goal and a dream for all those guys. But yeah, it's real. And I know that the Packers don't like the cold any more than anyone else. They're just more accustomed to it. They'd much rather prefer to play in the 70-degree weather, but I know that there's a confidence that comes with it. They wear it kind of as a badge in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers certainly does. But I think the fact that Tom has played in the Northeast as long as he has and played in those conditions, he's aware of it. He'll be able to communicate that to some of those players who aren't accustomed to it. And I think Tom will play well as a result of it. I think he's actually very much looking forward to the conditions.
How do you explain Aaron Rodgers? If somebody never saw him play, Troy, and you were trying to sum it up in 30 seconds, how would you do that?
I think he's got a coolness to him, I mean, I just don't see him get flustered. It just seems like he's always holding the winning hand, and he knows it, to where there's a confidence about him, regardless of whatever's happening in the game, that he's going to pull it out. And I know that's how I feel when I go on to broadcast one of his games, that he's done so much. He's the MVP of the league, in my opinion. I said that probably with a month left in the season when there was a lot of other people being discussed. And the reason being that he just doesn't have the same supporting cast. And it's nothing against those players, but when you compare, what they've had there in Green Bay relative to some other teams, a lot of their success, understandably, is the quarterback. But I think a more so than maybe some of the other teams where they've gone on and had success and have great players at the quarterback position.
What does Buffalo have to do? Assuming Patrick Mahomes is healthy, what would be your game plan in Kansas City?
Well, Dan, we had that game in the regular season, a Thursday night matchup there in Buffalo, and Buffalo was determined not to give up the big play, which is priority number one when you're playing Kansas City, of course. But to my surprise, Andy Reid just continued to run the football, and that's not really Andy's style either. He's always been criticized about getting away from the run. They ran the ball. I think they ran it for over 200 yards that night. I would have to go back and look, but so I think that the game plan works. I think if a team just runs the ball, that it's hard to score a lot of points as long as they're not getting big runs. That I think they did a good job in that regard. They got to shore some things up with the run game and then just play smart. I think when you get into January football, as we saw yesterday in our game, the takeaways and the turnovers are huge. I mean, really huge. They're huge every week. But the difference in these teams is so small that you just have to be really, really smart with the football and not beat yourself and give yourself a chance going into the fourth quarter. And I'm looking forward to it. I know it's going to be a great Super Bowl matchup regardless of whoever wins this next weekend.
Of the four teams that lost over the weekend, which team's in the best shape coming back next year?
Oh, man, off the top of my head, I always like New Orleans, and the reason I do is because of Sean Payton. I just think that he's going to have answers. He always does. So I like that group. I like Sean McVay and the Rams. I think they've done a good job now. I don't know that I'd say they're in the best shape. I think now there's some uncertainty as far as what's going to happen at quarterback. And then also, I don't know if it's been announced yet. Sounds like they're going to lose their defensive coordinator. And he was, in a lot of ways, the MVP of that team. So
yeah, he took the Chargers job. Yeah.
Yeah. So good hire for the Chargers. He's been an impressive guy, Brandon Staley, and he'll be sorely missed there in Los Angeles for the Rams.
If you were the Texans GM, how would you clean up this mess?
Well, I think you got to first get on board with quarterback, you know, and I'm the last guy who would say that the players run the organization. And I don't think Deshaun Watson does, but he's a great player and you'd hate to lose a guy of his caliber. I think that that has to be mended somehow. I don't know what the communication was. I don't know what he was promised or however that happened. But I think that would be priority number one, is making sure he understands that he's going to be given every opportunity to go out and have success. I think that's what every player wants. That's certainly what every franchise quarterback wants. And they have to be able to prove that to him and satisfy him in that regard, because he's too valuable to just let walk and not have a replacement.
Would you take offers?
Yeah, I would always take offers. I don't know that anyone would ever be able to offer enough. But yeah, I would certainly listen.
If you ran the Jets, would you offer everything?
No, I wouldn't offer. I wouldn't offer everything.
But. Well, not a Herschel Walker type trade here, but a yeah. Herschel Light. How about, you know, maybe three first rounders and a couple of second rounders for Deshaun Watson?
Well, Dan, I worked the draft when Mayfield and Darnold and those guys came out, Josh Allen. So I have a pretty good feel for those quarterbacks before they even got into the league. And I think Darnold is a really talented guy. I'm not willing to give up on Sam Darnold. Now, I would have to study him and really dig into it and see. But I think the Jets have had a number of issues. And to pin that on Darnold or say, hey, the reason we've not been very good is because we don't have a quarterback, I'm not willing to say that. I would have to take a much harder look. And maybe their franchise quarterback is in the building right now.
Have you ever had a player confront you after something you've said or said maybe a previous game, previous week, previous year when you go to a game location-wise?
Oh, not in a long time. Not in a long time. I've had players at different times who have come into a production meeting and had issue with something that I've said, which I'm open to having a conversation about. I feel like I'm fair, Dan. I think every broadcaster feels like they're fair, right? But I you know, that you don't go in with an agenda. But I'm willing to have a conversation. If I'm critical of a player, I feel very strongly in what I'm saying. So I'm more than willing to have a conversation as to why I said what I said. And then if I need to be corrected, if I thought maybe they were responsible for something in which they weren't, because we don't. Especially when you're talking about secondary players, you don't always know. Sometimes it looks like it was this particular guy, and I know coverages as well as anyone. But and I'll admit, I mean, I'll certainly come out and you know, make amends to it. So
it was never go time. You never thought like somebody wanted to get physical with you.
No, I've never. I don't think I've ever said anything that would have offended anybody that much.
Well, it's early in the week, Troy, so who knows, you know?
I don't know. How about you, Dan? Has anybody ever come
out? Yes. A-Rod, yeah. A-Rod and Lawrence Taylor.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have something in common with Lawrence Taylor. Yeah.
That's impressive. Those are Hall of Famers coming after you.
Lawrence scared me. I could see the whites of his eyes through his dark sunglasses, and I thought he was coming after me.
Hey, and Lawrence Taylor scared me, and I was fully padded with a helmet and shoulder pads.
Have fun. Safe travels up there. Tell Joe Buck we said hello. Always great to catch up with you, Troy.
Thank you, Dan.
That's Troy Aikman. He'll be on the call. Fox will bring you the Bucks and Pack at 3 Eastern. That'll be on Sunday.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's bring in Lewis Riddick, the Monday Night Football analyst, former pro scout, director of pro personnel, and, of course, a former NFL defensive back who joins us on the program. Lewis, thanks for joining us. Was that a dirty hit on Patrick Mahomes, in your opinion, by Mac Wilson?
No, it really didn't. It didn't come off that way to me watching it live. And, you know, having watched Mac Wilson play and you know, and anecdotally just kind of like seeing what other people have said about Mac Wilson and how Mac kind of expressed, you know, his feelings afterwards, it didn't seem like that. Quite honestly, Dan, when I saw the hit, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, wow, where did it come from? I mean, how did he get, you know, how did he get concussed on this play? Because it wasn't a vicious style hit. It wasn't like the same kind of hit like Jadeveon put on put on Carson Wentz in the playoff game a year ago. It wasn't that same kind of, you know, hit to the back of the head. So, I mean, I was kind of shocked, quite honestly, when Patrick got up looking the way that he did. But, you know, from all indications, based on what Andy said, he was doing well after the game, and hopefully he can play next week.
Well, I thought Sorensen's hit on Higgins, helmet to helmet, was far more right. egregious, and that was not called.
Absolutely. I mean, no question about that. And I think that's something that the league and the referees are going to have to be more consistent about and continue to work to try and be more consistent. Because, look, I mean, Nick clearly dropped his head, clearly hit Higgins in the side of the head. I mean, it's as plain as day. And although that's not reviewable, I mean, it's just it's wild that is not that's not being called with more consistency. And I understand it's a big game and it's a crucial play and you don't want to, you don't have crucial plays like that in ball games decided by referee calls and flags being put on the field. But in the name of safety, which is always what this has always been about, you have to strive for more consistency than that.
What do you think of the rule where you fumble the ball out of the end zone and automatically, you know, the defense, you turn it over to the defense?
Yeah, I think I'm like everyone else. I mean, you don't. It seems very ridiculous that, you know, that you're being punished for effort, for trying to score the football, and, you know, and then you lose possession of the football totally at that point in time, and, you know, you don't have another chance to try and punch it in. I mean, with the rule being what it is, I mean, you've heard many coaches, you know, Bill Belichick in particular, and I know Kevin Stefanski was talking about it as well, coach players to not reach the ball out unless you are sure, unless you know you're able to score, don't do it, which you're never going to know if you're able, you know, to score per se. And it sucks because it's one of those plays that really kind of took the wind out of the sails of the Browns at that point in time. But it's something I'm sure they're going to look at here in the offseason because you don't want those kind of things again coming up in big games, Dan, deciding football games or deciding the momentum or, you know, significantly swinging the momentum of football games.
But how would you fix the rule?
I think, you know, that's hard to say. I mean, I think there's a number of different ways that you could. I think at that point in time, you know, I don't really know. I don't really know.
Because I said really just take it back to the 25-yard line, loss of down, and then that way I'm going to punish you, but I'm not going to punish you for that extra effort. I can't decimate you for something like that. Although I do agree with what Belichick and Mike Vrabel say to their players, just don't do it.
Right.
But I'm thinking if we change the rule, how do we change the rule? Yeah. And maybe you just bring it back to the 25-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty standard way to try and legislate that kind of play, you know, as far as legislating some kind of action or some kind of punishment. It's hard. I haven't really thought it through about how exactly would you fix it, although it just seems way too punitive, obviously, to take the ball away from the offense, again, in punishing effort like that. I'd have to give more thought to exactly what, you know, how to do that. And I think the league's going to have to, too. And I think that's why the rule hasn't been changed, because they probably haven't been able to think about, well, exactly what do you change it to then? What makes the most sense in that kind of situation?
As a former defensive back, I want you to put yourself in the defense yesterday with the Browns when you see Chad Henne and it's fourth down and you see the play clock. They're going to try to draw you off sides. You don't think that Chad Henne is going to run a play, given where the ball is and what's at stake here. What do you think as a defensive player in a situation like that and the possibility of them running a play?
Yeah, as a second-level defender in particular, Dan, and you're not on the defensive line, obviously, if you're a D-lineman, I think first and foremost you're thinking, number one, I'm just not jumping off sides. I'm not moving until this ball moves, even if I'm late off the football. So I think their mindset is much different than the second- and third-level defenders. If you're a linebacker or safety, you're off the ball anyway, so you don't really care about hard count. You're not, it's not going to really affect you one way or another. What you need to be focused in on is, in the event that they do run a play, I need to know where I need to be. And I know is particularly where I need to be in regards to who their best players are. So I definitely needed to know where number 10 was.
Yeah.
I needed to know where Tyreek was going to be. And you can't relax in that type of situation. And then lastly, with fourth and one type situations, you're sitting there in the shotgun. I mean, that's where, from a coaching standpoint, you just have to, like sprint right option is something that Andy Reid and all West Coast offenses have run over and over again. That's all that play was. That's what they were running back in the days of Bill Walsh. And I mean, it sounds easier, you know, easier said than done at this point in time. But I think that's what it's about at the professional level. It's about preparation. It's about key moments like that. And you just have to be prepared for it. You can't get caught off guard. You just can't. And I know everyone from Romo to the people sitting at home were shocked that they actually ran the play. But again, if you're a second or third level defender, you're a linebacker, safety, corner, it's about doing your job and not worrying about whether or not they're just going to try and draw the front four or front five offside. And it's just too bad. It's too bad that if, in fact, people did relax and weren't really playing with the same kind of urgency that they normally would, that it ultimately cost them, because that was a huge freaking play. It was a huge play.
He's Lewis Riddick, the ESPN Monday Night Football analyst. Of the four losing teams over this weekend, who's in the best shape moving forward?
Wow. You know, really, I mean, I would say, look, the Browns are, I think the Browns are in good shape, because Kevin really does have a good idea of what he wants his football team to look like. And for the first time in a long time, he's got them pointed in the right direction. And Andrew Berry has done a fantastic job of continuing some of the work that they have done previously as far as stockpiling draft picks and drafting young players. So I think they're in good shape from an AFC standpoint. And look, I think Baltimore is too. On the NFC side, I think the Rams got to figure out exactly what it is that they really feel towards Jared Goff, and if he is going to be the guy for the future for them moving forward. And because it just sounds like Sean at this point in time is just noncommittal, and that he's really going to take a deep dive, hard look at his football team, particularly at that position. But from a young player standpoint, they have done a pretty darn good job under some difficult circumstances, given what they've given up in terms of draft capital to get some of the players that they have, of still stockpiling that roster and positioning themselves for the future here in one of the toughest divisions in football, if not the toughest division in football, ultimately out there in the NFC West. So I think those two teams in particular look real good going forward. I mean, the Saints have a lot of issues going. I mean, they are just in absolute cap hell going forward. They got to figure out what's going on at quarterback now, because you have to assume that Drew's last game was last night. Is Jameis the guy? Is Taysom the guy? What's the situation there? And how are they going to continue to build out this roster, given the fact that they're going to have such limited resources from a salary cap room perspective?
Would you rather go against Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? There's no third option there, by the way.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think that's so, man. Either way, man, I'm gonna be disrespecting two of the greats. But I think right now, I mean, I'd rather go against Tom because of the fact that Tom has his own reasons for wanting to continue to be great and obviously get to the Super Bowl. And the guy has never become complacent, despite the fact that he has been the most successful individual probably in team sports, maybe definitely in the history of the NFL. But Aaron's just on a different, he's on a different level and has a mindset in a cockiness in kind of a way about him right now that, having talked to them both this year on Monday night production calls, that you just knew that he was going to continue to try and just absolutely torch everyone all year long. And he was in a zone with Matt LaFleur that maybe he's never ever been in his entire career, and that's saying something given some of the spectacular seasons that he's had.
But can we simplify this, though, Lewis, and say when the Packers drafted Jordan Love, they lit a fire in Aaron Rodgers?
Well, we can try to, although if you ask him and when you talk to him, he won't say it lit a fire, although you know it did to some degree. I mean, because you know him, he's just one of the – he's a type A competitor. I just think he hit a level in his second year, in the off season, in terms of his relationship with Matt, that this was inevitable, whether or not they drafted Jordan or not. I think this the evolution in terms of his comfort in that offense was going to happen, Dan, no matter what.
I would draft a quarterback in this year's draft, too.
Yeah, there's no doubt that, look, he's again, given all, no matter how successful he has been, and that's the cool thing about all these guys who are supreme achievers. Just like we saw with Jordan in The Last Dance, they always are looking for something. And even though they won't admit it, of course it drives them. But I think that relationship, and I'm big on that part of it, on the importance of relationships. As he developed that relationship with Matt LaFleur in the offseason, and Matt talked about that too, this thing just took off, man. I mean, it just took off. And you see it happening with Tom right now. As him and Bruce get more comfortable, as him and Byron get more comfortable in Tampa Bay, they look like they are starting to click. And they really did last night. Now, is it going to be enough against Green Bay? I mean, you've been up there. You know how miserable it is up there. And Aaron has talked about it. How much are you willing to suffer when you come to Lambeau? How much can you take? How soon until you start looking at the clock going, hey, those buses right outside the stadium, heat them up, man. I'm going to get the hell out of here. That's what he says. It's how long are you willing to suffer? And we're going to find out next week as far as Tampa's concerned.
Let's see. What else did I have? How do you salvage Deshaun Watson?
I was just asked this a little while ago. I don't know. I mean, you know how relationships are. Sometimes it's not salvageable. Sometimes you just breach someone's trust so much to the point where there is no turning back. There just isn't. And this sounds so systemic down there and so ingrained in the way not only he feels but other players feel too, that I don't know if you do. I just don't know if you do. And that would be a damn shame, to be honest with you.
But you start taking offers, though, Lewis?
What's that?
You start taking offers?
I think you have to listen. Because if the guy doesn't want to play and he has a no-trade clause and you can't dictate to him where you send him to, I mean, what are you going to do? Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? And they're in a terrible situation from a team rebuild as far as not having draft capital. And they could get a boatload of it. And there's teams out there who have a boatload of it to offer them. Now, that would be a terrible way to start off your tenure down there if you're Nick Caserio. But, hey, if you're Nick, you're like, hey, look, I'm not the one who created this situation. I'm not the one who directly created this situation, but I'm going to try and make the best of it. Because it may be one of those games that you can't recover. And if you listen to Deshaun and you talk to people who have been down there, and it's not just Deshaun who's feeling this way. He's just the front-facing guy. He's just the one. God forbid, I'll tell you what, if J.J. Watt comes out and says something like this too, to the point where he says, look, I just want out of here. I want to end my time here because the wheels are going to really come off.
Well, he's going to.
And that's too bad.
Yeah, he's not going to play there next year. I can't see J.J. playing there. And also, I was told this 2 weeks ago by a source. Don't be surprised if Eric Bieniemy does not get a head coaching job. Now there's two openings, Lewis. What am I missing here with Eric Bieniemy? And it looks like Leslie Frazier might be the leading candidate with Houston. And then we have Philadelphia.
I think what you have is, look, human beings are making these decisions, and human beings engage in confirmation bias all the time. And right now, for some reason, and I don't really want to go down this rabbit hole to the point where we make this into a racial discussion, but for some reason, all these things, all these different excuses keep coming up about Eric, whether it be he doesn't interview well or are there things in his past that cause you to press pause. In terms of his accountability and leadership and his dependability going forward, which are just BS. And Andy has talked about so many different times that it's just ridiculous to even bring up at this point. But I think that's what's happening. Then, of course, there's the whole he doesn't call plays. Well, you know what? I've talked to Andy enough times about this in Red Beach to say that, look, the amount of responsibility that they put on him is the same, if not more, than the responsibility that Andy gave to both Doug and Matt Nagy. So I would hope like hell that this is not simply about, you know, the whole, you know, being comfortable with hiring people who don't necessarily look like you, have the same experiences as you, and you still have those kind of hang-ups and have those kind of reservations that would keep you from hiring a young coach like him, a relatively young coach like him, who has coached one of the greatest players we've seen coming into this league ever, and who vouches for him without pause. I would hate I would hope that that is not something that is deciding this this man's future as far as being a head coach. But I'm not naive enough to think that it's not a factor, because there's no other reason. There's no other reason at this point, Dan. There's just flat out no other reason. And that's awful. That's something I know the commissioner does not want to be the case. I've talked to the commissioner. I know how important that is to him. And for this to be something that, again, we're addressing another year, another hiring cycle, is just flat out embarrassing and ridiculous that we're having to even entertain these conversations. Why isn't Eric Bieniemy at the forefront of someone's, you know, of someone's hiring wish list? Why isn't he not at the top? I'd love to know what those reasons are, those objective reasons are. I would love to have sat in on an interview with him and to where people come out of an interview and go, nah, he's not quite the guy. And that's not to take anything away from some of these other guys who are getting jobs, because I tell you this, I said back in September, the very first time I talked to Brandon Staley, this kid is fantastic. He's fantastic. Was blown away by him. And Sean told me that at the Super Bowl last year. You're going to be blown away by Brandon Staley. He is that sharp. I've talked to Robert Saleh. I know how impressive he is. I know how impressive he is. Brian Daboll, I know how impressive, even though he may not get his job either in this cycle, I know how impressive these guys are. Arthur Smith, I've known for 15 years. Arthur Smith used to come and watch tape with me in Washington, sitting in the scouting room, in the scouting hallway, when he was just trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his life. And Vinny Serrato and his dad, Fred Smith, said, hey, can he just sit in here and watch film with you? Because he just wants to be around football. And now I knew Arthur was going to be a head coach. So these guys are fantastic. But for Eric right now to have the conversation swirling around him in the manner in which it is just criminal. It really is. It's sad, because I've talked to him as well and probably talked to more people about him than I've talked to about any of these guys. And it's just so unfortunate, and it's so defeating, and it's so deflating. But onward we must press. And that's just the way it is.
Well said, Lewis. Thank you. We appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Dan. Thank
you. That's Lewis Riddick from the Mothership, Monday Night Football Analyst. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.